I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another installment in our series of conversations with the candidates. Former State Delegate John Olszewski Jr. joins me. Known as Johnny O, he represented the county's 6th district for 2 terms in the Maryland General Assembly. He's one of 4 Democrats running for the office of Baltimore County Executive. The county executive manages a $3.5 billion annual budget. A recent report expressed concern about the fiscal condition of Maryland's 3rd largest jurisdiction. Several development projects in the county have become political lightning rods, as has the need to relieve overcrowding in county schools. I'll ask Johnny O about his vision for the county he's always called home. Plus, Kamau High of the Afro-American newspaper joins me for the Afro Check-In. Midday starts right after the news. And good afternoon. Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Today, we're going to continue our series of conversations with the candidates in the run-up to Maryland's June 26 primary elections. My guest is Democrat John Olszewski Jr., the former state delegate and public school teacher, who's one of 4 contenders vying to be the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. Known as Johnny O, he's a lifelong resident of Baltimore County, a graduate of Sparrows Point High School and Goucher College. He was just 23 years old in 2006 when he won election to the Maryland House, where he served for 9 years representing his hometown in District 6. In the House, Olszewski served as the chairman of the Baltimore County House delegation. He was the youngest person ever elected to that position. He also taught at Patapsco High School and elsewhere in the county for 7 years. He holds a master's degree from George Washington University and, since last December, a PhD in public policy from UMBC. He is 35 years old. He lives in Dundalk with his wife, Marissa, and their 2-year-old daughter, Daria. We are streaming our conversation today, as we do with all of our conversations with the candidates, on the Facebook live stream on the WYPR Facebook page, so you're welcome to join us there. And then a little later in the program, we will take your calls, your questions, and your comments. Johnny O, it's nice to see you, sir.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So one of the things that primary voters have to figure out is if there are any particular distinctions between the platforms of people who are all in the same party. So
sure.
You're one of 4 candidates. What would a difference in an Olszewski administration be between, for example, a Brochin administration or an Almond administration?
Sure. It's hard to pick just one issue. So what I can tell people who are listening or watching is that an Olszewski administration represents a bold, progressive agenda for Baltimore County, for the region. I'm the only candidate running who supports universal pre-K, free community college, expanding the minimum wage, earned sick leave, campaign finance reform, ending housing discrimination. And so what voters can get can expect and what they'll get from an Olszewski administration is a bold progressive agenda moving our county forward.
There are those who wonder whether or not some of those initiatives, minimum wage, for example, mm-hmm. which has been a very controversial issue here in the city, is better taken up on the statewide level rather than the county level. Why do you think something like universal pre-K or free community college or a $15 minimum wage is something that is in the purview of a county government?
Well, first and foremost, I'd say that I do prefer seeing all those things enacted at the state level, and would use my relationships at the state to better partner to make that happen. I'm pleased to be endorsed by not only the Speaker of the House, but also all of the relevant chairs of the House committees. And so I think there are lots of opportunities to partner at the state level. But I think that Baltimore County has a responsibility, an obligation, to act in the absence of movement on these important issues, because I think for our residents, they are crying out to see action on having the best start possible with universal pre-K and expanding school meals and improving our school system. People who work hard, I believe, should be able to provide for their family, and we should affirm the dignity of work. And, I think the first thing I would do is work with the state. But in the absence of actions, we can take steps like doing a study, for example, in Baltimore County, what that would look like before we decided to move forward here.
I mean, there's currently a bill for the minimum wage, you know, floating through the General Assembly as we speak. They've got another week to go before the last day of the session. Here in Baltimore, Mayor Catherine Pugh, who even campaigned a little tepidly, but said she would support a $15 minimum wage in the city, mm-hmm. actually vetoed that bill mm-hmm. in the city council. And her reasoning was, if Baltimore stands alone as a place where the $15 minimum wage, and the same, it's applicable to this situation. If Baltimore County had a $15 minimum wage and Anne Arundel, Howard, other adjacent counties did not,
sure.
that would put Baltimore County at a disadvantage. How do you respond to that?
Sure. And again, I'd absolutely say that my preference and my focus as county executive will be partnering not just with the Baltimore County delegation, but legislators across Maryland to enact a $15 minimum wage for all Marylanders. But I do think in the case of wages or benefits or our education system, that in the absence of action, we should at least look at and explore those possibilities. One of the things that we haven't seen any leadership in from our council, for example, is exploring at least what do some of these changes look like? What would it look like to have universal pre-K in Baltimore County? What would it look like if we had free community college? And actually, you know, I'm pleased that some of the proposals like free community college is being moved on at the local level, both in Baltimore City and more recently here in Baltimore County. I like to think that our efforts to push those items onto the agenda have helped been part of moving those along.
The other contenders for the Democratic nomination for Baltimore County Executive have been here over the last few weeks, and I asked them a question I want to now ask you, and that has to do with the report of the Spending Affordability Committee, mm-hmm. having to do with fiscal year 2019. This is an annual report that is made according to county law.
Yep.
And this report is a little bit nervous about the future of the fiscal situation in Baltimore County, which, mm-hmm. you know, over the years, has not been a county known for encountering a whole lot of fiscal problems. But the report identifies immense challenges that the next administration and council will be forced to address. What do you see those challenges as, and what's your political philosophy to address them?
Well, I mean, I'll first say that, you know, I believe that we need to invest in our people and our future. And what we've allowed ourselves to do in Baltimore County is we've allowed ourselves to max out our credit card. Even as critical needs within our infrastructure, whether that's roads or sewer lines or our schools, frankly, have remained unaddressed. And so we need to have a bold agenda and a bold vision for where we're going. And then we have to find a way to address the fact that we are coming up against our credit limit. I think that starts with, you know, my preferences in terms of finding ways to address the ever-growing needs in the county are to grow our county so that we have a larger tax base. I think we have to leverage partnerships. So on schools, for example, one of the things I want to do is replicate the 21st Century Schools program that we've seen create or renovate dozens of schools across Baltimore City. And then I think we can invest in strategic public-private partnerships to bring in some additional help and resources. And then we have to get our priorities right. You know, in Baltimore County, for example, we've spent upwards of $300 million a year on a one-to-one laptop program that, for example, you know, I think is inappropriate for first graders. And, you know, given other priorities, when we have children who are in schools with brown drinking water or schools that are literally sliding into the ground, I think our priorities are a little out of sync if we're not meeting those sort of fundamental needs first. And so what I'll do as executive is go in, conduct a comprehensive audit to identify fraud, waste, and abuse in Baltimore County government. We'll make sure that we leverage our partnerships at the state and in other places with the private sector. And we'll be transparent about how we spend our money so that people know that we have our priorities right, so that we can balance the need to invest more in our infrastructure with the fact that we have these very troubling, you know, coming up on our credit limit.
John Olszewski Jr. is on the ballot in the June primary as Johnny O. He is running as a Democrat in the primary for Baltimore County Executive. Again, a reminder that we are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page, and we'll take your questions and comments a little later in the program. Let's talk about schools, specifically school construction.
Mm-hmm.
Very controversial issue in this year's campaign. We've got a new school wanted by the folks near Delaney High School. We've got one that the folks near Lansdowne High School want. We've got the folks in Towson, Towson High School, looking for a new school. There's this been this debate about whether they should be renovated or completely nuked and started from scratch. Just a report in the Baltimore Sun just in the last 48 hours about the historic landmark designation for Towson High School, for example, a building that was constructed in the 1940s. There's a suggestion that perhaps that historic designation should be taken away. It would make it would clear the way for a renovation or a rebuild of Towson High School. It might make it a little easier. What's your approach to all of that?
First and foremost, to recognize that for me and for my own life, education changed everything and transformed every possibility I've had. I was the first in my family to go to college. That's why I became a school teacher in the first place. It's why education was a top priority of mine as a state legislator. It's why education is the cornerstone of my campaign for county executive. As it relates to school infrastructure, I think we have to stop making it about this community versus that community. An Olszewski administration will say all of these kids deserve to learn in and these teachers deserve to teach in school conditions that affirm their dignity, their value, and their worth. And we can't say this is a zero-sum game where communities feel like, well, if school A gets their new school, school B can't. We have to find a way to make sure that all kids have that. I think there's nothing greater that we can invest in and spend our resources on than our educational system. So my response is, I think we have to partner with local communities to identify what their needs are and then meet them. I do think that as it relates to the Towson question and the historic designation, I think that reflects a desire to make sure that those kids have the new school. I think if there were a greater commitment to both historical preservation and school infrastructure, there wouldn't even be the need for that conversation in the first place. If parents and teachers knew that they had an administration that was intent on making sure that we made it happen, and because I think we can balance historical preservation with school investment. And so I wouldn't want that to be a false choice that parents feel like have to be balanced against each other, that we can do all those things and that, you know, frankly, I will do all those things.
There are some estimates that say, for example, to rebuild Delaney High School in Timonium would be upwards of $140 million. Mm-hmm. And you know how this works. I mean, if they're estimating $140 million now, by the time the darn thing gets built, it's $160 million or $180 million. You know? Can you do three high schools, you know, concurrently, simultaneously, given the fiscal restrictions that any jurisdiction has?
I think we're irresponsible to not take a look at the whole picture. And so what we have to keep in mind is what are the maintenance costs as we allow old schools to continue to age. We can add air conditioning through a renovation, but that may not address the underlying infrastructure of electricity or plumbing. And, you know, frankly, we need to make sure that we're giving our students all there needs to be some equity. And so all children deserve that. I think I'd return back to the STAT program as one example of that $300 million. If it were leveraged, Baltimore County essentially gets a one-to-one match in our state funding. So that's about $600 million that could have been used to build all of those schools.
Remind folks about the STAT program.
Sorry, so this is a one-to-one laptop program that our school system engaged in recently so that every student across Baltimore County has their own individual device. But what I'd say is what I mentioned earlier is also having this strong, robust 21st century program replicated after what Baltimore City did. And I worked with my partners in the city as chairman of the County House delegation because I recognized what they were trying to do. And that's what I want to see here for Baltimore County. I want to see us invest the money up front to be matched with a significant state investment so that we can get those economies of scale where we're not piecemealing schools, we're addressing the long-term costs. And then I also think we can think about paying out our buildings. You know, these are 40, 50-year investments in new schools. So if we don't think of it as a 15 or 30-year bond or investment, but we think about it, the full life cycle and what we're actually getting, I think the benefit-cost analysis will show that that's probably more often than not it's worth making those investments.
Quick question before we take a break regarding the schools and the school superintendent, Verletta White, under something of an ethics cloud, nothing like the ethics cloud that her predecessor, Dallas Dance, who's now been indicted for fraud and misrepresenting his relationship with various vendors. Should Ms. White be the next superintendent of the Baltimore County Schools? There is a search underway for for someone to have that job. Mm-hmm. I guess she's still a candidate, as far as I know. Your level of confidence in the integrity of the management of the Baltimore City, County Schools.
I think the current superintendent is a great story of homegrown talent rising through the ranks. I think she is a true asset for the region and for the county in particular. We're very lucky to have her. That being said, I think that it's a responsible action of the board to be conducting a national search, and I'd encourage her to participate in that search. And I think that our board members can balance any concerns that folks may have versus that homegrown talent. And I would never question her integrity or her character. I think that she is a great example of what our school system can and will produce.
Not concerned about her accounts?
Of course you're concerned about it, but I think that that's the point that, there's a process for the school board to carry out. I believe that they are or have done that. It's why it also, for me, it's important that Baltimore County government, and that includes the school system, is open, accessible, and transparent, that we need to post more awards online, that we should have multiple budget hearings, another policy of mine that finally is being enacted upon after being voted against by the county council, that we need to move our work sessions to the evening instead of having work sessions in the middle of the day where people cannot participate with the county council, that there need to be clear restrictions on what people can and can't accept. And those are all reforms that I want to undertake as part of county executive, and that cuts across all government.
Former Delegate John Olszewski Jr., Johnny O, is one of four Democratic candidates seeking his party's nomination to be the next Baltimore County Executive. Quick break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation with Johnny O. We will take your questions and comments. We have a number of people lined up on the phone ready to speak to Delegate Olszewski, and we will try to get to as many of you as we can. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And you can catch our conversation on the Facebook page, WIPR. We are streaming live. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WIPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, Dr. Sherry Parks joins me for this month's edition of Midday Culture Connections. Sherry and I will be joined by singer and activist Navasha Dia. We'll talk about the origins and influence of neo-soul around the world. There is a dynamic neo-soul community right here in Baltimore. We will explore it tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Johnny O, John Olszewski Jr. He is one of four Democrats in the race for Baltimore County Executive. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. We are, again, also streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. Former delegate, let me see if we can get to a couple of calls here. Matt, sure. In Catonsville, welcome to Midday with Johnny O.
Hey, Tom, I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to ask, what does your experience as a teacher bring to being Baltimore County Executive?
All right, thanks for the call, Matt. Your experience as a teacher, you taught for 7 or 8 years in Tapsco High School and a couple of other places as a resource teacher.
Yep. Thanks for the question, Matt. As I've said earlier, education is everything to me, both personally and in my own life. I think about the future of this county, and it's a future that I actually see through the eyes of my daughter, who is two, and what kind of legacy we're going to leave her and all of the families. I think about the fact that the next county executive will essentially set the trajectory of all of our students who are my daughter's age. I mean, she'll be three if I'm lucky enough to serve when I'm sworn in. And if I do two terms, she'll be a middle school teenager. And, for her and all of the thousands and thousands of students she'll go to school with, their entire life trajectory is set. So that's why for me, I sort of think about the trailer I taught in at Patapsco High School that had a hole in it that had a plywood covering for an entire semester. I think about the kids who struggle to learn in 98 degree rooms with a box fan whizzing in the back of the classroom. I think about the weekends after school mentoring and trying to get my kids to pass state-mandated tests. And so that's what drives my vision for the county. It's what drives my investment about investing in more teachers so that we have smaller class sizes, hiring more support personnel like pupil personnel workers and school psychologists and school counselors and social workers. Baltimore County, you know, it's interesting. We are about 10 times behind the national average, the national recommended range for social workers to students. The recommendation is about 1 to 125, and we have well over 1 to 1,000 social workers per student. And so as we think about both issues of discipline and differentiating instruction, but also issues of school safety, you know, investing in not just our people, but also our infrastructure so that children aren't learning in schools that are falling apart are both priorities of mine as county executive. Thanks for the question.
Let's go to Morgan in Perry Hall. Morgan, welcome to Midday with Johnny O. Morgan, are you with us? All right, we will come back to Morgan. Let's go to Sharon in Owings Mills. Sharon, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon. I got one of my questions answered because you said you believe in more teachers and more support people, and I'm a special education advocate and the mother of two special needs individuals. But my biggest issue right now, besides special ed, is school construction, because as I go around the county, I see students learning in portables that are so small you can barely put 20 kids in there, and they're cramming 27 kids in there. And you have schools like Lansdowne and Patapsco who are being forced to take a renovation when the school is at the point of it really needs to be replaced. And we're playing the zip code game where I live in the wrong zip code, so therefore I don't get the high school new one, I get the renovation.
Get the
How you're going to address that.
All right, thanks for the call, Sharon. It's not just school construction. It's development in general. You mentioned growing the tax base, growing the population of Baltimore County. There's a bunch of people who say, you know, we're experiencing sprawl. So it's not just the cost of building these schools or building these developments, but it's the impact that these things are going to have.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, thank you for your advocacy. I was a special educator and a social studies teacher. I was duly certified. So special education has a very near and dear place to my heart. And, you know, we have to provide the resources so that special educators have reasonable caseloads and that, you know, our kids aren't learning in crammed classrooms. I think the example of Patapsco is actually a great one. Millions of dollars that are being spent to renovate that school actually have limited the amount of actual physical classes and increased the number of trailers from when I was teaching there. So we have to be, I think, smarter about how we invest our resources. I think part of the question about schools like Lansdowne Delaney that you mentioned earlier is, you know, not only is there a cost for not making them new in terms of maintenance, but there's also there's a smaller delta between what a comprehensive renovation that really addresses all of the underlying infrastructure and what a new construction might actually be. So I think there's lots of opportunities. I don't believe that a child's zip code should determine the quality of their education. And that's true both on the facility side, but also on the people side. And, you know, having taught in the school system, having, you know, I will be a county executive who sends my daughter to our school system because I think it's important to lead by example. You know, my pledge is that your zip code will not determine the quality of your education in Baltimore County.
I got a couple of questions about guns, as a matter of fact. We have some comments on Facebook. Julie writes, I notice you have an A rating from the NRA. You voted against the Firearm Safety Act of 2013. You also voted to allow domestic abusers to keep their guns. In addition, you have an A rating from the Right to Life organization. You are pro-life, and you are denying my right to terminate a pregnancy if something goes wrong. How does this make you a progressive? And I guess, Ann and Towson, you're on the phone, and you have a question that is along the same lines. Welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Thank you. I have a question for you. I just attended the march in Washington, D.C., and I want to know how you, after Sandy Hook, how you could vote against the Firearm Safety Act of 2013.
All right, good. Thanks for the question, Ann. So, you know, a couple of listeners wondering about guns.
Well, I'll say first and foremost, thanks for attending. My wife was also in D.C. I had a candidate forum, and then I actually attended the Baltimore March. Look, I think the first thing people deserve to know is that, like, you deserve an executive who can say sometimes you get things wrong. And, you know, there are things that you would have done differently. And so, you know, in light of some of the things that I've seen since some of the votes I've taken, particularly as it relates to firearms, I've always believed in common sense gun legislation, whether that's background checks or banning bump stocks or assault weapons. And, you know, I can look back and say I may have gotten that one wrong. I can tell you that I was balancing a conservative constituency and there were individual parts of the bill that I had concerns about. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think people deserve an executive who can say, you know, in light of what's happened, especially in recent years, as a father now, as someone who thinks about my time in the classroom, you know, you can look back and say, maybe I got that particular vote wrong or those votes wrong. I think what's important is that you have an executive in Baltimore County who's focused on making sure that our children and our families are safe moving forward. And that's what you'll get from an Olszewski administration, someone who, you know, will oppose any effort to arm our teachers, a county executive who will make sure that we're investing in school safety so that, you know, children and teachers are safe, that there are the safety mechanisms, that we are investing in the school personnel, the school counselors and the psychologists and the people who help identify those issues early on, and that we have smaller class sizes so that teachers can identify if there's an issue within a schoolhouse, what the concerns are there.
I do want to talk a little bit about development and sprawl and the county's role in encouraging and sometimes, you know, subsidizing some of the big development projects. We've got this Towson Row thing. We've got this Towson Gateway. We've got this thing where Kays Valley Partners wanted to build a Royal Farms gas station. They cut down a whole bunch of trees. There's an event tonight, which I understand you're attending, 5 o'clock tonight to mark the anniversary of when all these trees were cut down. There's an investigation into how that happened, whether or not that was appropriate. Kevin Kamenetz is certainly the current county executive. He's running for governor, as most listeners know. He's had a lot to answer for in that regard. The county council opposed him in that regard. Your political philosophy about the role of county government in encouraging development and whether or not you think that there's room for lots more development in the county.
I think there's incredible opportunity for redevelopment in our county. We need to respect some of the boundaries that we appropriately set long ago with our URDL, our urban-rural demarcation line. But as I travel around the county and talk to residents, I mean, people want to see neighborhoods, both the residential and the business side of things, reimagined and reinvigorated. And, you know, that's I think, the challenge of having an executive who has the vision to propose, as I have. And again, another thing I'm glad to see moving forward, at least in the southwest part of Baltimore County, have things like arts and entertainment districts, to have a plan for all of our main streets and invest in them more meaningfully, to leverage great incubators like Towson University and UMBC, not just to support those hubs, but then figuring out how do we capture the spinoffs and keep them here in Baltimore County to make places like Towson and the Arbutus-Catonsville communities really thriving. So I think that, you know, we shouldn't be averse to growing. I mean, but growth doesn't have to be knocking down open space and putting up new houses. Growth can really be how do we reimagine and reinvest in our existing communities to make them something we're all really proud of and that become a net benefit to our communities.
In December of last year, the county council approved $43 million to assist the people who are developing Towson Row. This is a project that had become stalled. What's your feeling about that kind of involvement with taxpayer resources to subsidize development?
I think that project can help be transformative to Towson, so I'm glad to see it happening. I've been on record saying that I would have preferred a different set, a different structure to that level of support. For example, some sort of loan proposal as opposed to sort of an advancement of some of the credits that they might be entitled to and other monies that they won't be paying and they're actually going to just get in advance and then pay back, essentially. you know, it goes back to priorities. And so, you know, we were talking earlier about the STAT program, but this $43 million, I think, is another example of, you know, I don't know how we can turn to our families and say we have the resources to do that, but we don't have the resources to make sure that children are learning in and teachers are teaching in schools that are clean, modern, and safe. And until we can say that our schools are clean, modern, and safe, and that until we can, you know, create educational opportunity and job opportunity for all, you know, that's where my priority will be.
Concerning this controversy over what was to have been a Royal Farms store and gas station at the corner of York Road and Bosley Avenue, what about the issue of the fact that the county appeared to green light this project and then rescinded that light? All of a sudden, that light became red. I mean, what kind of message does that send to the development community in terms of the integrity of the system of the county?
Residents and business interests deserve clarity, and they deserve transparency, and they deserve a fair process whereby if a project is productive and helpful and the community is engaged, then we can, I think, you know, we can actually find ways to make good projects come together. You know, part of what we hadn't talked about is, you know, I'm the only candidate running, Democrat or Republican, who's calling for a public finance option for campaign finance reform in Baltimore County, modeled after how we've elected our governor, modeled after what's working very successfully in Montgomery County and Howard County is trying to get off the ground. Because, you know, there are all sorts of interests in the government and special interests. And ultimately, if we can have residents both be responsible for electing us and being the small dollar match that allows us to have the resources to compete, at the end of the day, we're going to make decisions that are in the best interests of the overall community, including resident feedback, working in partnership with the business community. And, you know, I think that that's the best thing we can do to sort of reform that, coupled with sort of an openness and a transparency about how business is conducted.
I have a comment about affordable housing in the county. This is on Facebook. Melissa writes, please talk about your feelings about deconcentrating poverty and housing vouchers in Baltimore County. Many in eastern Baltimore County feel that we're having the odds stacked against us with so many of these low-income housing apartment complexes, yet other places in the county have none. You and I are progressives who want to see everyone succeed, and I believe everyone has a right to safe, affordable housing, but cramming them all into an already suffering area is not working.
That's right. And again, I'm proud to be the only candidate, Republican or Democrat, who has endorsed a plan to deconcentrate poverty. One of the best things that we can do, frankly, is to end housing discrimination in Baltimore County. And I support ending it. I think
there's a consent decree that also says that the county has to do that.
True. But the county council, the current county council, has had an opportunity, as had my other opponent at the state level, to endorse legislation that would end housing discrimination, which is one part and parcel of how we can address this issue. Because look, I think discrimination in any form is wrong. What we've allowed by virtue of keeping this discrimination on the book is that the exact same companies that operate in East and West Baltimore County accept vouchers in those parts of the county, but then don't accept them in other parts. So I think that, you know, again, discrimination on any level is wrong. As executive, I'm committed to ending that policy. And then working thoughtfully with developers as they develop to use the resources and tools in our toolbox that are part of the agreement to make sure that there are other options throughout the county. Because I think that, you know, she's absolutely right. When we have when you have concentrated poverty, the needs of the communities are only sort of stretched further. And so the thing that we can do to help not just the families, but also those communities is to deconcentrate that poverty.
But that's a difficult political issue. Mm-hmm. Because what about the voter in northern Baltimore County, Towson, Timonium, Moncton even, I mean, who say, look, if landlords are renting to people who are subsidized with their rent by Section 8, or if these people who are coming from the city under the programs like Moving to Opportunity, where they're taken out of high crime areas, areas where the school systems are terrible, and they're given an opportunity because of subsidies to live in a place like Baltimore County where their kids can go to better schools, that's going to deflate and attenuate the property values of the homes that these folks have had for a long time. How do you balance those two interests?
Three things. The first I'd say is that, let's be clear, we're not talking about more housing vouchers. That number is set, and there's been a waiting list that is years and years and years long that people are waiting to get on. The second thing is, by equitably distributing those vouchers, you actually don't have a disparate, you don't have a negative impact on communities. What happened when you start seeing those results is which is what we see in Eastern and Western Baltimore County, is that there are so many vouchers and so much poverty that you do start to see those results. But if it's more sort of equitably spread and not concentrated, you're much less likely to see that. The last thing I'd say is, I guess, more of a value statement, is those are the same arguments that people said about, well, a person of color, or your sexual orientation, or your religious beliefs. You know, at what point, you know, again, that's why for me it goes back to discrimination is discrimination. And so I think that we need to end it as a practice.
We have a Facebook comment from Tom Cork, who is a member of the Baltimore County Council, and he is the author of the spending affordability report we referenced earlier. Mr. Quirk writes on Facebook, state does not contribute dollar for dollar for school construction with the county. More like a third from the state, two-thirds from the county for every dollar. Plus, the county has forward funded over $230 million that we hope to recover from the state. They currently give us about $40 million a year. So thinking that the state can magically fix this issue is a major misunderstanding. Why would Johnny announce that he's supporting a new Delaney? He posted that on Facebook. This is according to Mr. Quirk, when he said that it should be equity for all. Is he saying that Lansdowne should also get a new high school as well?
In fact, I am, and I'm the only candidate for Baltimore County who supports both a new school for Towson, Delaney, and Lansdowne. With schools like Patapsco, who actually had the worst rating, I think we'll have to be creative and give them facilities that are up to standards they deserve as well, given that we've already invested $30 million. I'd say that, you know, as it relates to the match, I think that depends on project. And as it relates to the forward funding, you know, we in Baltimore County forward fund a lot of projects on the hope that the state will match that what they typically match. So that's part of the reason why I think having a 21st century complete program, not just for the economy of scales, but also so that we actually have that commitment from the state that, you know, if we're going to put up a large sum of money here in Baltimore County moving forward, and I'm committed to doing that, that we're going to also see that match from the state.
I got to give you about 30 seconds to answer a final political question.
Sure.
Primary voters have to decide on a certain level who's the best candidate. If they're Democrats and they'd like to see a Democrat retain that seat as county executive, they have to decide who's best positioned to beat the Republican candidate. Larry Hogan, a very popular governor statewide, he's 85% approval rating in Baltimore County. Perhaps he will have coattails with whomever the Republican nominee is. Maybe it's Al Redmer, maybe it's Pat McDonough. Why are you best positioned to beat whoever the Republican nominee will be?
Great question. Thanks for asking it. It's another reason why I think I'm the best Democrat running in this primary is I've proven, having represented a moderate to conservative district in eastern Baltimore County, that I can be a true progressive Democrat and I can run on issues like raising the minimum wage. I was the original earned sponsor of earned sick leave, support policies like ending housing discrimination, and yet be very successful. I was the top vote getter in both of my House races in the year that Governor Hogan carried my legislative district by 15,000 votes. When I ran for Senate in 2014, I outperformed every other Democrat running for state Senate, and I only lost by 500. So come a general election, if in the worst possible year for Democrats, I can tie in eastern Baltimore County in a general election, imagine what will happen in a good year for Democrats. And as we've seen nationally, this is
a lot of folks predicting this will be a good year for Democrats. Well, Johnny O, it's nice to see you, sir. I appreciate your coming in, and we will certainly keep paying attention as the campaign continues.
Thanks for the opportunity.
John Olszewski Jr., known as Johnny O, is one of four Democratic candidates running for Baltimore County executive. Other candidates in the primary include State Senator Jim Brochin and County Councilwoman Vicki Allman. The primary is June 26th. Early voting begins in 73 days on Flag Day, June 14th. This has been another in our series of conversations with the candidates. You can catch all of our candidate interviews at WIPR.org/midday. Coming up after a short break, Kamau High, the managing editor of the Afro-American newspaper, stops by for the Afro check-in. And before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the city of Baltimore in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who has compiled a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 17 years. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list, which they've been keeping since 2007, and the Baltimore Police Department's Facebook page. So far in 2018, 59 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Three victims of homicide were reported by Baltimore police last week. They are Derek Jefferson, age 52, Dante Stuckey, age 28, and Dimphna Ava Powell. She was 46 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.